Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's change will affect tomorrow's community. This program is a production and extension of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Today we're continuing our coverage of the release of a large national poll by NPR in collaboration with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health that asked people about their personal experiences with discrimination. We're joining with other NPR stations for a series called You, Me, and Them, Experiencing Discrimination in America. Today we'll be turning our attention to the experiences and views of Native Americans and Indigenous peoples. In the new poll overall, Native Americans report substantial and significant personal experiences of discrimination across many areas of life. The report shows that 75% of Native Americans believe there's discrimination against Native people in America today. In today's show, we'll be talking about a more local perspective, and my guests are Violet Cavanaugh, Northern Chumash Tribal Council co-chair, 35th District Representative for the Democratic Party, Fred Collins, Tribal Chair, Northern Chumash Tribal Council, and Roberto Monge, co-founder of City Repair Slow. We'll also be talking about experiences and views of Native Americans and Indigenous peoples as we examine both state of discrimination in America and discuss issues and attitudes closer to home. Excuse me. This show is live, and we invite you to also join our conversation with comments and questions. And you can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875, and again 805-781-3875. And just I want to welcome all three of you today.
Thank you.
Just based on the energy in the room as you guys entered, I think it's going to be an incredible show. And I want to start with you Fred. You are the tribal chair.
Right, tribal chair for the Northern Chumash Tribal Council. And what we do is we're the caretakers of San Luis Obispo County. The Chumash Nation is made up of approximately seven tribal governments, and each one has a portion of our native nation that they take care of. And our portion that we look after, along with a couple other groups also here in San Luis County, we look at everything from north of the Santa Maria River to the Monterey County line. And when I say we look after it, we look after all of the small animals, we look after all of the trees, we look after the water, we look after, you know, all of the different things that affect those things that we live with. But one of the most important things that we do is we protect our ancestors. All of this, 100% of this land in the past was ours, and now we have less than 1% of it. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, our ancestral sacred spots exist, and that's what we do, is we preserve the best we can. And the Northern Chumash Tribal Council, we review every project that comes in out of the planning commission of the county, out of the planning commissions of all the cities, you know, all of the townships, you know, the different agencies. There's a lot of agencies. So our desk is full with all types of projects. We have our fingers in the community very deep. We have a lot of projects that we're always sponsoring and being involved in. So, we have, a real good look at what discrimination, racism, ethnic cleansing, cultural genocide is all about it today. And, I don't think that you can look at those issues today without looking back into
right.
the past and looking mm-hmm. back into a time. How did we get here? And one of the things that I've tried to do for a long time is put the puzzle together, you know, with the wisdom of the elders and, you know, reading history and understanding history. And, you know, it started, you know, for us, I mean, we can pinpoint a spot, you know, say, you know, 1432, when at that time, you know, the Pope was in control of pretty much all of the influence in the world. And he started this, what is called a papal bull, which really, it gives explorers and conquistadors and people who are traveling to other new places on the world the ability to conquer the indigenous people in a way that was very unfair. And in 1493, it was the papal bull was completed, and the Pope Alexander the sixth gave Ferdinand and Isabella this doctrine of discovery. And what the doctrine of discovery said was that any time an explorer would land on a shores of new lands where there were people, if the people were not Christians, they could enslave them, they could kill them, they could enslave their children and take all of their resources. Now, this was came from the Pope. So all of these explorers, when they came to, you know, Columbus, when he came to our sacred lands, we believe there were between 70 and 100 million indigenous people from Tierra del Fuego all the way to Alaska. This is, you know, and in the Americas, we believe there was between 5 and 10 million alone in just the Americas. Okay, in a very short time, that has changed.
Yeah.
And really, the discrimination comes from even before the papal bulls and whatnot, it's a discrimination of the dominance. When you use greed as your driving force to dominate others, this is where everything falls apart, and it's where it fell apart for us, is the resources, the gold, the, you know, the timber, the farming lands, all of these things that were, you know, that are just make our country, America, a wonderful place, were viewed as prizes for monarchs like, you know, Spain. And, you know, when you go back, I saw a movie talking about Queen Victoria and Abdullah. And when you look, the movie itself for me was looking at the opulence that was going on back right. in those feudal, I mean, it was amazing that the drive for money and power through land and resources. And that's really what drove the greed.
And I have a question about that. And yep. I want to turn that to you, Violet, because, you know, and I don't profess to be, this is an education for me, and I'm so glad you're here because mm-hmm. I am learning today. But it seems to me that just in the mentioning of protecting the land, protecting the environment, protecting the animals, that, you know, the peoples that were here were living within those things rather than conquering and possessing and controlling those things, correct? Can you talk a little bit about the way that the native peoples shared with, you know, so that people that don't understand, it's a different concept when somebody's coming to take possession.
I think that's a really good question because it's a question that's in the forefront of the press and the media, and what we're dealing with right now is resources and is profit over people. Mm-hmm. And so I think that when you look at indigenous ways of living, you see that the indigenous people have a different viewpoint, an inherently different perspective of the use of resources.
Will you talk a little bit about what that viewpoint is?
I think it centers around sustainability and only taking as much as you need and really taking care of the resources and the planet and the earth and our animals and our water for the future generations. For we want to be good stewards for our grandchildren. And we want to leave this place better than what we have lived on this planet. And I think that that whole perspective is at odds with a lot of, you know, capitalistic money power moves. And there's a whole generation of people that are growing up and they're feeling empty, spiritually empty. And they're wondering, you know, how to fix this connection that we've lost with the land and with the resources and with the animals and how to have a more meaningful, you know, existence here on the planet. And, you know, we're talking what Fred was saying about, you know, the drive for resources is still on the forefront of what we're our conversation that we're having today.
Yeah, it's been on the forefront of a lot of the major headlines in the last number of years about the same thing, of taking land for purposes not to put back into it, but for resources to take from it.
Resource extraction can be done in a meaningful and sustainable way. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the way, you know, we're fortunate to live in a place that I should preface this with saying that California is really the forefront and the best representation of, you know, some of the laws protecting indigenous rights. And that being said, even though there are problems in California, like the rest of the nation will look to us, you know, to lead the way. And California is by far the best at sustainable, innovative, like green energy and renewable energy and dealing with natural resources. So that being said, you know, we can always do better. But, you know, San Luis Obispo is one of the best.
And it's a representative for the 35th District. What kind of role do you have in that for the political aspects of what you're trying to do?
Well, I think, you know, the election changed a lot of things for a lot of people. And since I was a kid, you know, growing up here in Avila and living by the ocean, you know, that's our most important and most sacred resource is our ocean right here. And, you know, opposing offshore oil drilling has been a really big deal in my life. You know, we've experienced, before I was born, we had the big Santa Barbara oil spill.
Right.
And then we had another oil spill recently. And then all the oil leases came available this year off of our coast. And, you know, we've worked with the local counties and cities and people to ban offshore oil. Fortunately, the state of California is also on board with banning offshore oil off of our coast. But, you know, federal waters 13 miles out and, you know, we don't have control over the Trump administration and what they want to do in federal water. So after the last election, I just, you know, I decided I'm a big supporter of Bernie Sanders. And, you know, he said it's up to us. And I always thought, why don't people do something about it? And then I realized,
well, wait a minute,
I am somebody and I should do something about
it. Yeah, good for you.
And so that's where this all started. And being part of, you know, the Slow Democratic Party, the Central Committee and the 35th District, it's an honor to be able to represent, you know, our people in politics, but also to have a voice for, you know, the ocean and the ancestors and the land that we, you know, love so much. And politics, they need a different viewpoint. They need more women in politics. We need people with different viewpoints.
Yeah.
And so we need a better representation of what our community really looks like.
One of the things that came out in the survey was that there was this attempt to reach out to Native Americans during this last election, a significant attempt. And
one of the best attempts ever.
Yeah,
I think that the issue, and Roberto can talk a little bit about this too. We had one of the biggest politicians in our country, you know, at Standing Rock, and you know, with us, and his people were there, and you know, and Bernie Sanders put a light on, you know, our struggle. And there's been very few national level politicians that have really embraced the Native people like he did. And I think that was one of the first, you know, eye-opening points for us, is that we can actively participate in national level politics and put forth our messages and be effective. And I think that our country is ready for more, you know, women and minorities to step up and take these roles on.
Yeah, yeah, so. Absolutely. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you on KCBX. This is Central Coast Voices. We're talking today about discrimination of Native Americans and Indigenous peoples as we join other NPR member stations for a series called You, Me, and Them, Experiencing Discrimination in America. My guests and the voices that you hear with me, this was Violet Kavanaugh, who's Northern Chumash Tribal Council co-chair. 35th District Representative for the Democratic Party. The first voice that you heard was Fred Collins, Tribal Chair for the Northern Chumash Tribal Council. And we're going to hear right now from a voice from Roberto Monge, who is the co-founder of City Repair Slow. And we'd love to bring your voice into the conversation as well. This is a live call-in show, and you can reach us and be part of this discussion by calling 805-781-3875. And Roberto, I'm going to turn to you. All Violet right. gave you a nice segue in here. And so, you know, when we start these shows, we always ask for some information, a little bit of background, and mm-hmm. a little bit of tell me about the points that you want to make. And I was really fascinated with some of what you were writing about Indigenous peoples and some of the issues around how we have blended together, you know, in our perspective in America, yeah. in the U.S. here, how, and talk a little bit about that.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, so my name is Roberto Monge, and I am Maya Lenka from El Salvador. And I was born in a small village. In terms of this, you know, going back to, I love the start, right? Starting near Columbus and the Popol Vuh and the extractive kind of mindset.
I love his history.
You know, I think that's exactly where we need to start. So my direct, you know, discrimination started before I was born, like many of us. But my father was revolutionary in El Salvador. And a lot of people think it was about, you know, like Russian socialism or communism, right? But really, when you really look at, especially Latin America, it was about indigenous values and more communal owning or communal management of land versus, you know, ownership. And my uncles and aunts created a cooperativa, a cooperative farm, and the powers that be at the time, who owned a lot of the resources, were not happy about it because they weren't able to sell seeds, they weren't able to sell fertilizers, and because these people were actually doing it
cooperatively
and trading basically yeah. instead of, and so they actually sent troops, and the men were off working, and the women and elders and children were gathered, and they were killed. So
this was how long ago?
This was just 40 years ago.
40
or so.
Years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Recent.
Yeah. And so that was sort of my initial awakening to a lot of this discrimination, you know. And, you know, it is and was more intense in Latin America, where there's a lot more less balance or less, you know, news coverage, or, you know, so people have a lot more power. And I think a lot of that would still happen here if it wasn't for, you know, let's say media.
Kind of a check and balance.
A little mm-hmm. more, right? You know, going to this Standing Rock, right? So a group of folks from the Central Coast went over there, and it was amazing. I looked around, and I was like, wow, this looks a lot like El Salvador, you know, what was happening there. And sure, there were rubber bullets instead of, you know, full metal bullets, but the techniques and the treatment of people. So women were praying, you know, in front of the pipeline path on treaty lands, and they were arrested and strip searched and put into kennels, you know, and it was so...
Into kennels?
Yes. It was so shocking to see someone treated that way, and it was this whole, like, treating others as if they are animals or something
less than subhuman.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where we need to start, is just being able to look at each other and just see the humanity in each other, and you know, stop calling each other names, let's say,
right.
And but also acknowledge our differences, you know. So you had mentioned this idea of sort of just calling, let's say, people like Indians, right?
Right.
Or, you know, a lot of people just say like Native American spirituality, right?
Right.
And it's so different, and it's so diverse throughout, you know, even nearby villages, that it's really good to start naming things. Like Fred was saying, we have 7 different, you know, groups here, and knowing those groups and knowing their names and knowing their culture, it starts there, curiosity.
Yeah.
Instead of the other, right? I want to know more about the Northern and the Southern, and, you know, all the different tribal councils here and tribal groups. So to me, that's some of this whole concept of decolonizing. So trying to look at what it's really hard to look at your own culture in a way, because that's just what you were born into. And so the reason we need diversity is so that we see our own gaps in our culture and all our viewpoints, so that we say, oh, wow, you're right. You know, we shouldn't. Maybe communal lands aren't a bad idea, right? I've never lived in one. Tell me more about it. Mm-hmm. And so, and then in terms of city repair, it's one of its covert sort of missions is to, neighborhoods were very designed in the U.S. in this grid pattern. And it's a Roman grid. And it's actually, it's a way of taking lands in a way and being able to manage them from central locations. So I can look one way as far as I can, and I could put a soldier in a corner and make sure no one's hanging out and doing something bad, right? So our whole country was designed in a way that it was actually trying to separate people. And so what city repair tries to do is it's kind of put the circle back in. It sounds kind of silly in a way, right. But this kind of ancient technology of sitting in circle is very
to
powerful
equalize.
To equalize it.
Yeah.
And it's also a public square, right? So pretty much it was fun to see at Standing Rock, all these little micro villages were popped up because there was no grids. There was a big field, right, where people were camping. And then, you know, this tribal group got together, and then there was a central fire there. And then this group got together, and they put a fire there. And so what you saw is a bunch of circles around, like, one central fire. And it was really beautiful to see how organically how that happens.
Right.
No one went out and drew a bunch of lines and said, you know, here's my square area.
Right.
It was just circles and expanding out from there. So what we try to encourage is kind of painting circles in the middle of an intersection and then gathering around that art, that beauty, and then starting to hold events in that sense. So go outside, go in front, join your neighbors. And that recreates that sense of village, which is something that I deeply miss from my time in El Salvador.
What is the discrimination that you face when you're trying to implement these types of things into our modern world? I'm curious about that.
Yeah. So the first one is knocking on your neighbor's door. It's really interesting to be like an older man with long hair knocking on people's doors saying, hey, you know, we're going to have this thing or this potluck. And I get it in terms of, like, sometimes people's safety or whatever. But there's a look of, like, why would I do that? And who are you, you know? So that lack of curiosity. So that's been really hard. And so the way we combated that is actually I have a neighbor that is a woman, and she's well-known in the neighborhood. And so she went out and sort of handed out the flyers to bring people together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that... That has various levels of, you know, of issues there. But I think that's been a really hard thing, is breaking people outside of their box
comfort,
that was
their
driven.
Comfort zone.
Yeah. Or even like, oh, I'm going to leave my TV night, you know.
To look through a different lens.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing that's interesting in the survey that were results, too, is when they were surveying individuals about their experience of discrimination, the experience that they had was that when they were in specific areas that were designated as tribal areas, like reservation, the incidence of perception of lack of support, lack of ability to call for help, discrimination from people outside increased.
That's definitely true.
Yeah, I mean, we're the lowest of all the societies. We're the 2%, you know, that's at the very bottom. And so we get the bottom of everything. And then the first programs that are taken from the broader society affect us first, you know, and foremost. And you really, you have to look at, you know, for us, the indigenous people, the land was everything.
Yeah.
The land was our life. The land was our soul. The land was, you know, the way that we communicated with that energy that pervades the universe and for us. And so, you know, when the United States declared independence, you know, what they did is in the Constitution and in Independence Declaration, they included the Northwest Treaty. And the Northwest Treaty was a treaty that England had cut and made deals with all the Native American tribes up and down the Ottawa, all of the big tribes. And so the United States incorporated, and it said, you cannot go west of the Alleghenies and trade with the Native people for land. That was written. And so what happened is, of course, that's immediately one of the first things that happened, is you have all of these carpetbagger-type people going, forming what's called the Wabash Trading Company, and then they secured huge tracts of land. And this land was not legally holdings. And so you got George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, all of these guys that are in our government holding 24-mile tracts of this land. And how do we get it in? So in 1824, there was a case under John Marshall, and it's called Johnson v. McIntosh, and it's 1823. In that case, it was a case where there was a senator from Georgia who was a very flamboyant type of senator. Anyway, he came up with the idea to create a case that was completely fake. And he picked all of the parties, and it was about a person who had gotten land from a Native American and wanted to make it legal underneath the Constitution of the United States. And so he created this case. And this case, he knew it was going to be defeated in one court. He knew who was going to go to the next court. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court. It made it to the Supreme Court. But John Marshall, as they were going through this case, he discovered that it was a fake case. So they dismissed the case. But in John Marshall's opinion, this is what he said. He said that the Native Americans are too warlike. Their skulls are not of the same structure as white Europeans, and they can never be incorporated into modern society. Therefore, all of the indigenous lands are taken underneath the trust of the United States of America. On an opinion, we lost everything. And that's where you get this huge momentum of discrimination that starts, you know, it's a tidal wave of discrimination that comes across the United States. And 1849, gold's discovered. I mean, oh my goodness, my ancestors, can you imagine the horrors that they faced here? 1849, the treaties of Guadalupe Hidalgo, they said, okay, if you get to San Francisco to sign the documents, you can go and have a piece of land for reservation. The first governor of the state of California, John McDougall, in his acceptance speech said, I will wipe the heathens off the face of the earth in my first term. And he put a 25-cent scalp fee on my ancestors, my great-grandma, my great-grandpa. And how are we supposed to get up to San Francisco to sign this document when we'd be shot on sight? So these are the kind of discriminations that we are facing today. And what we're doing is we're embracing ourselves. We're embracing our community. We're embracing all the people that are here so that we can wash ourselves and begin this horrible healing, or this great healing, to wash away these things that affected our DNA.
When you talk about embracing, what does Fred mean?
Well, Violet? Before we move on from one thing you said, Chrissy, you said, how long ago did this happen?
Yeah.
I remember you asking Roberto, how long ago did that happen? He said 40 years ago.
That particular incident.
Yeah. Well, this was less than, 120 years
right.
ago. When we
it's
say,
all very recent.
How long did this happen? How long ago did this happen?
And it's continuing.
And so when we talk about, the increase in discrimination, you said on tribal lands versus when people live off of tribal lands. But we can also talk about on tribal lands, there's no electricity,
correct.
No running water. People are still freezing to death and people are still starving.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about why is there an increase, because those tribal lands are controlled by the federal government. So, of course, people are going to feel different living on, and when we talk about water, and we talk about, like Flint, Michigan, like the water contamination and the tribal land's water is 3 or 4 times more contaminated, you know, than lands that are not on tribe, you know, not tribal lands.
Right.
But we don't hear about that. So, you know, I didn't want to move past that when you said, when we bring that back to what's happening right now,
right?
You know, we may not be experiencing that here because we don't live on tribal land. We live in the city of San Luis, which is, you know, one of the best places on earth. But we have to remember that an hour away, there's tribal lands.
Yes.
There's people with no water, no electricity, and people that are hungry.
And they're being held down in the chains of non-truths, the chains of half-truths, the chains of trying to hide what really happened. You know, I mean, this is what we face here every day. When I look across the table at an applicant, I can feel the energy that why am I messing around with my project? Why are you telling me that on my land I can't do this or that or the other? Why are you, Mr. Native American,
are
you telling me this? Yeah. I am the superior because I own this. I bought it, and I come from Alabama, and, you know, and I'm the best, you know, and I sign my Bibles. And so this is the type of thing that we face every day.
Yeah.
And so I got to set them down and I say, look, let's slow down here and let's look at what's going on. So I explained to them that I and my family have been walking this land for 18,000 years continuously, and we're not here to stop growth. We're here to do it in a way where everybody works together.
Of the various tribes, because you mentioned multiple tribes, is there common ground in terms of, is it consistent within all the tribes, the respect for the environment?
Well, I think that's that was one of the first misconceptions, is that people always ask me, how come you guys don't just get along? And Roberto's laughing at me because asking us how come we don't get along is asking the Democrats and the Republicans and the Tea Parties and people that don't vote and people that are, you know, atheists and people, how come you guys don't all get along, right? And so when you ask something like that, you're putting us all in a box, same box. But not only that, you're assuming that we're all sharing the same political, social, economic, you know, because there's a lot of different economic, you know, positions within the difference between us living here on the coast, one of the most expensive places in our nation to live, versus living on the reservation in North Dakota is completely different. So the viewpoints of mineral extraction, of protecting the ocean, of just community, of what we can do. We live a privileged life here. I can come here and spend an hour of the day with you talking on the radio, where some people don't have that luxury in any racial, ethnic group, in any, whether they're Black or Hispanic or in any group. If you're struggling, you know, to make ends meet and to feed yourself, you can't be involved politically, and you don't have the luxury of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a completely different point of where we live and how we view this.
Yeah. So there is no, I want to dispel that. There is no consistency.
There's no consensus and there's no consistency.
Exactly.
You know, the thing that's so wonderful is the people here in California, you know, have stood shoulder to shoulder with us to bring the truth. And that's what we're talking about here. Bring the truth to light. And then fix it.
Right.
You know, just don't bring it and then let it, you know, go back underneath into the closet. Fix it.
Yeah.
Do things that are good for the people that have been forgotten. Mm-hmm. And do things good for new ideas. You know, like the community living together in a way with not straight streets. You know, I mean, this, when you think about that, it's kind of really strange, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
it everything. Is.
If you... Why don't we have contours to things, you know, and make it, you know, part of Mother Earth in so many ways.
Right.
We separate ourselves, you know. I mean,
lines.
That is, you know, I think your ideas are so much locked again in indigenous thinking and indigenous way of being, because, you know, I think it all fell apart, you know, for the greedy folks when they tried to dominate women. You know, for us, it's the indigenous communities are matriarchal societies. I mean, the women came to me and got me. They said, you know, Fred, it's your turn. And they do that to all leaders. I mean, it's always been. And I think that, you know, the disrespect that the world has, you know, perpetrated on women was probably one of the first stones that crumbled to put us where we are today. And within our society, we respect the women tremendously. You know, they play an equal part, even though we may be a stronger voice or we may go out and hunt the deer and whatever. They are the ones that hold the medicine.
And I want to clarify, because there gets to be confusion when you're talking about in our society, or you're talking about in the Chumash society.
I'm talking about the Chumash society completely.
In most indigenous societies.
I'm just trying to be clear, going back and forth here.
And same goes for the village in El Salvador. You know, the women would have the decision-making power. And one of my favorite stories is actually from a teacher I had, Jake Swamp, and he talks about the Haudenosaunee and the way that they, the women or the clan mothers actually did what Fred was saying. They would pick out who the next leader would be, and they wouldn't select on most like leadership like in the front. They would actually look for the humblest, most thoughtful young man to do that, and they had the power to pull him. And so imagine, and what's interesting is our founding fathers, George Washington and especially Benjamin Franklin actually spent some time with the Mohawks, and they actually modeled a bit of our Constitution after it. And there's a great painting where there's a delegation of Mohawks on where they're signing the Declaration, and they're up in the corner. And the story is that they came running saying, wait, don't sign that document. You've taken some great ideas here, but you've missed the very essence of it. And the very essence was that women were the clan mother, which became the Supreme Court, which is all, you know, white old men with long, you know, maybe that's why they have wigs. I don't know. But imagine now a world where the Supreme Court is grandmothers.
Yeah.
And they're pulling these bratty, you know, presidential, you know, orange folks off the thing because they're like, you are not looking out for the people. You're looking out for yourself. So what a beautiful thing. And another thing you said that they would do is whenever there was conflict on the, let's say, assembly or Congress floor, they would say, wait, you're getting really mad. There's something deeper here that needs to be dealt with. So they'd pull them aside, basically have a council and figure out what the hell's wrong with you. And then they would say, now we can go back and make the decision because there's obviously some grief, something that's not processed. So this is where we need these different leadership models, where we're so used to picking the most vocal, the loudest, the most, you know, like
the most aggressive.
The most aggressive. That's what we choose. And so that's what we're getting.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is actually my favorite part of the segue.
Let me just really quickly hold that thought. This is Central Coast Voices, and you're listening to KCBX Radio. The voices that you're hearing with me today, coming up in just a moment, Violet Kavanaugh is going to be talking. We have Roberto Monge, and we also have Fred Collins, and those are the three voices you're hearing today. We're talking about discrimination of Native Americans and Indigenous peoples, and you can join the conversation by calling 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. Take it, Violet.
So one of the most interesting questions that you gave me was, what do we do? And that's what we should really talk about, is not what, you know, where we've been, but where we're going.
What can we do?
And Roberto was talking a little bit about, you know, the Constitution and our founding fathers. But what is left out is the women.
Mm.
And what I want to say is, you know, recently I just got accepted into Emerge California training, which is training for women to run for office.
Fantastic.
And like 85% of the women that they have trained, including our mayor, Heidi Harmon, has ran successfully and won office. And if you look back last Tuesday across the nation, how many women and minorities have run for office and won. And so when we talk about discrimination with our people, we talk about it, we share a lot of overlap with every other group of people. And we have all got the similar stories that we can talk about. But the one thing that's missing is women representing, you know, our all of our people in office.
Yeah.
And that level of care for the next generation, for, you know, for the environment, for the earth, is historically amongst Indigenous people a woman's responsibility. You know, women are the ones that care for the children, the next generation, the planet, and women have always led that. And so, you know, we talk about electing the strongest man, the loudest voice, the biggest muscles, and the
biggest
toughest
ideas, right?
Right? But that's, you know, the male energy and the female energy has to balance that out. And so that's, you know, what we're lacking a lot in politics right now. And what, you know, I'm really excited to be a part of is this new political revolution where women are taking back their space and using their voices. And they may not be as loud, but there is just as many. And when we show up for each other and support each other, you know, look what we can do.
And there seems, you know, from all three of you, what I'm hearing is that trying to teach in the process and trying to start healing and trying to find a way of bringing peoples together and doing it in a way that is consistent with bringing the environment some kind of healing as well is really important and at the essence of the whole process, rather than just pointing out that something is wrong. It's where do we go?
Isn't the you know, the environment and the health of our planet is really the thing that affects the most marginalized groups first. So when there's problems with water, it's the poorest communities and the most minority, the most you know, immigrant communities, marginalized communities all around the nation that get affected.
Right.
And so when we talk about environmental issues, we talk about, you know, the quality of people's lives and health care. Those things, you know, related to pesticide, water quality, whatever it is, affect our people the most and first.
You know, when you were talking about the water, in NPR, they've been reporting, in fact, this week, and from 1944 to 1986, mining companies blasted 30 million tons of uranium out of Navajo land, mm-hmm. and left
contamination.
Not only in Navajo land, but also in South Dakota on Pine Ridge Reservation. Mm-hmm. They left some 2,200 uranium ponds, right, that are still exposed,
right,
to this day.
They're going nowhere, and they're seeping into the water supply. Mm-hmm. They have had devastating. So when we talk about looking at other countries and say, you know, that's just horrible to do that to your people.
It's harder to look at yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and ourself as a nation. And especially when, you know, we're comfortable, it's harder to look at ourself and be critical of what we're doing here.
The thing that's really, you know, so important to us, and, you know, is that we're the last ones. You know, the Northern Chumash Tribal Council and all my cousins who are here fighting, you know, for the things that we do and stand for. Without our stand, it just gets completely bulldozed. It gets completely destroyed. And so, you know, where are we going in the future? I mean, how is this going to change and how are we going to get better? I come from Silicon Valley. You know, I've got over 25 years. I'm a telecommunication system specialist, you know, and I also have a tremendous legal background. I was a legal administrator in a law office for over 7 years. So, you know, over the years, I've acquired skills to do the job that I've been honored with. And Violet and I, we do a lot of behind the scenes negotiating and negotiating in a way that, you know, people will never see. But what we do, you know, it's just like, you know, I have a really good friend, Rob Rossi, the number one developer in San Luis County. We weren't always friends, but we've reached a point where we saw mutual respect was the best way to go for him, saving him money, for us saving our cultural resources. And so here we got the number one developer in San Luis County coming to us before he has projects. He, him and I go out on his on projects, and he tells me, "Hey, Fred, what do you think about this?" Another developer, Dick Wilhite, up in Passero, was one of the largest developers up there. They come to us first, and they say, "Fred, what do you think of this?" So we're, as the future goes forward, this is what we're doing. We're able to open up doors. We're developing communities starting to see that cooperating and listening, let us sit at the table at least. You know, you may not like what we have to say, or you may not implement everything that we say, but at least we have this give and take, and it allows us to make changes where before we never had the opportunity. And believe me, in most of the states in the United States, the indigenous people don't have this opportunity.
No.
So, you know, I'm very, very thankful that we live here. There is still a tremendous conservative undercurrent that goes throughout California that we have to deal with all the time. But you know what? The balance here is starting to emerge in a way which allows us to sit at the table.
And one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we talked about is we shouldn't have to be radicals. You know, our community, we shouldn't have to be, whether it's taking a knee, you know, whether it's resisting the pipelines, like whether we're just complaining about our water and our contamination and our fish offshore here.
Right.
We shouldn't have to be radicals to want clean air, clean water, and clean food.
Well, it shouldn't be considered radical, you
right?
mean.
And so you see, you know, you know, the commonality between, I'm sure every week your radio show, the commonality is, why do we have to protest for clean water?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
it doesn't benefit just singular people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you see our people, you see the African American community, you see all these communities and everybody on healthcare, really. I mean, healthcare affects us all. But you see all these people that are radicalized, and we have become the other, all of us, because we care.
Yeah.
You know, and that's wrong. That's a fundamental thing that's wrong with the community, is because we care. We're the other, we're the outside, we're the rebels, the resistors, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we just recently put forth in the last 4 years a designation for a marine sanctuary off of the coast called the Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary. We had over, you know, 15,000 signatures, and the fishermen and the oil companies had less than 400, and they defeated us. You know, but we're not. On the first round, we're not giving up. Believe me, and we're going to keep moving forward. But the first round, we were defeated. And
oil
look
money.
Look at the will of the people here. 15,000 people in San Luis County, you know, all supported it. 400 people didn't. You know, and we weren't able to get our marine sanctuary. I mean, and that's a sad thing. But, okay, those are the types of things we're involved in. We're involved in, we're supporting the Trident Wind Project off of our coast. We work with Cal Flats. We're the environmental overseer out at Cal Flats Solar Farm. We were the same thing at Topaz and at Solar One. We've been involved in all the renewable energy projects here in San Luis County. This is what I do. I have a partner and I. We're in the process of building a solar farm in Baghdad right now. So, you know, we're involved worldwide, not just here, you know, and we believe that, you know, the more people that we can reach to work together, to communicate. I mean, technology. I mean, we use technology. I mean, you go to our webpage, www.northernchumash.org, and you can see what we do there. You can see how we move into the future. And Violet, you know, she's fired up about becoming a lawyer. I love this. This is where our community's going, you know. I mean, she's the next generation that I look to step in and move this forward in a good way, with everybody included.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, one note I was thinking about, what do we do for the future, right? I'm part of a school called Outside Now. I'm on the board of the school. And the idea is that we need to kind of rethink education. And the idea is that we've been disconnected on purpose by these grids, by education. The first thing that sort of colonizers would do is separate the children from the grandparents and break their language, right? So that happens often. And once you do that, you break the connection from water, from land. So, you know, my family, you'd go to the spring with the clay jug and you would bring it back. Do you think you would waste water? You know, if you had to do that like four times a day, you would not waste a drop of water. And it would be, you'd be so thankful that it was there.
Right.
And so that disconnection from our natural place really creates real social and psychological problems in people. And you see it. It's you see it in our politics. You see it in the way things are run. So if we can keep the kids connected to the land and we can keep them with some of these values and really, you know, sitting in circle more. My daughter just went to this writing conference. She's a real great writer. And she was invited to this teen writing conference. And they sat in a circle around the fire. And a few of the kids, they had gone to, you know, kind of prep schools, kind of. And they were like, I feel like we're in a cult. And she looked at him like, what do you mean? And they said, we're sitting around a fire. So these kids had never sat in a circle around the fire. They'd always been in rows looking forward, absorbing information from someone else. They weren't looking for their inner truth to come out. And so it just blew me away. So these simple technologies of just taking kids out on the land, sitting in a circle, knowing fire, knowing water, knowing soil, it's so critical for the future. There's you know, a ton of great books now on this now in terms of reconnecting children to, we have a nature deficit disorder right now that we need to deal with, and that's causing a lot of the harm in the world.
We do, absolutely. And you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. We're almost running out of time, but we have time for maybe one more call. You can reach us at 805-781-3875. You're listening to Violet Cavanaugh, Roberto Monge, and Fred Collins. And we're talking about discrimination, not only on a national level, but also on a local level for Native Americans and Indigenous peoples. And I want to get back to you. So we're talking about what can we do? I mean, what can other individuals in the community do?
Well, I think one of the greatest things that we can look at San Luis Obispo County is we have the biggest support, biggest group of allies here, and the most community support, broad community support for our values. So you go to some other place and, you know, you talk about wanting to bring it home and what we can do here. Well, there's very few other places that are as accommodating and respectful, you know. And so we have a lot of community support. Like today, for instance, we're doing a fundraiser for the food bank with our Slow Progressives. We're going to have, you know, a Friendsgiving where we all bring food and share together. And, you know, Thanksgiving is kind of a holiday most Native people don't really care for, you know, but is
that's not the story taught in school, but
we saved the white man.
But I love Thanksgiving. I love eating food. I love getting together with our friends and family. Right. And even though it's not a holiday we support, we have respect for the community, for people that need food. And, you know, we can be grateful that we're in a position where we can help people. And, you know, we can be grateful for our lives, where we live, you know. And, you know, today, this month is Native American History Month. We just recently got Columbus Day changed to Indigenous Peoples Day in San Luis Obispo. San Luis Obispo County, it was the first county in the nation to recognize the UN Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People. So when we talk about San Luis Obispo County, we are talking about one of the best.
Right.
And so,
and we can always do
but we
better.
Still have things like Hos and Navajo, you know, like Bros and Navajos, right?
And Cal Poly, we can do better.
One of the things at Cal Poly, I sit on the President's Advisory Council. I'm the first Native American to sit on a CSU Advisory Council at Cal Poly, and we're involved with the naming of all of the new dorms that are going out there. Mm-hmm. My grandson and I, we painted the last beam that went in to all the dorms with all Native American. And, you know, we had a big signature signing out of there. Jeffrey Armstrong and all the administrators came and signed. So we're involved. You know, we are in a position to open up our doors to the community in any way, shape, or form. If you want to contact us, if you want to find out what we think, that's what we want. I mean, our door is open. And it's so important that we're here for everybody.
We're going to take a call from Rick. Rick, hi.
Yeah. yeah, I was mainly calling to find out basically how we can get in touch and discuss some of these things and if there are any events planned where people can get together and actually go over all this stuff. Because I think there are a lot of people in this community who are on the same wavelength and would have things to share. I know I've been involved in environmental stuff ever since the 1960s, and I used to live in Big Sur, and I lived up in the mountains of Colorado for 20 years. And I think, you know, there are a lot of ways that we could get together to make things happen. But so far, it's been hard to figure out how to even contact people like yourself.
Well, Rick, there's not very many of us.
That's part of what happened.
But
Rick,
if you want to get together, we are doing, the Slow Progressives is doing a Friendsgiving tonight at the Grange Hall in San Luis, and we're gonna have a potluck. We're gonna have music, a band, nice, and a food drive. But we also have the Northern Chumash website, and we also have a Facebook page with the Chumash Sanctuary. So we can get messages and respond to you, and we can get communities together and have food together and share information, share stories, and reconnect with local communities, which we would love to do.
So where is this thing happening tonight?
The Grange Hall in San Luis on Broad Street.
So is that what they now call the Guild Hall?
The Guild Hall.
And it's what time?
It is at 5 o'clock. And it's a potluck and a food drive. So if you bring canned food with you, the Cuesta Ridge is playing. So we're going to have live music. We're going to have a potluck. We're going to have a food drive. So
is there any going to be any discussion?
There is going to be a lot of fun happening. We're going to have fun
tonight. And
you
can talk with a lot of people.
Yeah, you can talk to anyone.
Our best and biggest supporters will be there tonight. So
thanks for calling, Rick. So that's great, and it sounds like someone like Rick who wants to get together with you, he can do that. He can look at the website, get a hold of you, contact information, and say, hey, want you to connect with us. We want to connect with you.
And we'd like to encourage people to set up their own events in their own communities and invite us so that we don't have to set
exactly.
it up. So, you know, Roberto does a great job at doing
All
this.
All three of you were great information, fantastic. Got about 1 minute. One thought, Fred.
You know, Christine, I want to thank you very much for bringing us here together. You know, the energy that we feel together is often just unique. You know, it's a snowflake unto itself. And,
yeah.
and it's a blessing, too, at the same time. So I look at this as a blessing, and I want to thank you.
Thank you.
Definitely. Thank you for allowing us to be here.
Likewise, and also check out cityrepairslow.org for some tools for getting people together.
I want to thank my guests today, Violet Cavanaugh, Northern Chumash Tribal Co-Chair, Fred Collins, Northern Chumash Tribal Council Chair, and Roberto Monge, co-founder of City Repair Slow. Next week on Voices, we're going to be taking a break for the holiday, and we'll return to our regular schedule the following week. And you have been hosted by Action for Healthy Communities and San Luis Obispo Community Foundation, made possible by Joan Gellard Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us on Central Coast Voices.
Thank you.